Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Great to be back with you today as we're returning to our topic of family financial matters, a great topic this week, and even more important stuff today. We've got some great folks lined up in the studio today. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin. If you would like to find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, visit our website, KFUOAM.org. Go to the sponsor section and look for their logo there. Just click on that and you can find out quite a bit more about Concordia University. And if you'd like to join the conversation today, you may do so as well. Today, we're going to be talking about financial matters, preparing for financial matters for the later years of life. And not just, we're not primarily talking about retirement, but looking more so at the later things, planning for care in the later years of life and leaving a legacy. How do you prepare to leave a legacy for those behind you? So if you'd like to join the conversation in the studio today, you can give us a call at 314-821-0850 or outside of the St. Louis area, 1-800-730-2727, or you can email us here at family@kfuo.org. So today we're talking about planning for financial matters for the latter years of life, and we have a nice group here. We got probably one of our larger groups here in the studio today to talk about these matters. So joining us from the LCMS Foundation, we have David Fiedler. Welcome.
Hey, thank you.
And also from the LCMS Foundation, Alan Helms.
Good morning. Thank you.
And from Lutheran Senior Services, we have Kirk Mattis.
Pleased to be here.
And Jennifer Ronzio from Lutheran Senior Services as well.
Hi to all.
So we have a nice spectrum of people with experience and knowledge. A great day to call in with questions as well. I'm looking forward to this because while I'm certainly in those, middle-aged years or early family years, trying to figure out how to plan for down the road. And it's so nice to have all this knowledge and wisdom combined into one room so I can get all my questions answered today. And hopefully you can too as well. So let's start with our friends from LSS, Lutheran Senior Services. Jennifer, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do at Lutheran Senior Services.
Well, I am what's called a health services counselor. So I assist with admissions when it comes to our long-term care facility, as well as other levels of care within the long-term care. So you have residential care apartments, assisted living for memory care, skilled nursing, and then of course, there's a short stay rehab as well.
So you really have a strong grasp on making that connection and helping folks make that transition. And we were talking a little bit before the show. Your background is in social work, right?
That is correct.
Excellent. And Kirk, you're also with Lutheran Senior Services. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do with LSS.
Andy, I've been there since 2010. And started up the development department, which we call stewardship. So I'm the administrator of stewardship. We have a staff that's deployed throughout the senior services communities, trying to help people put gifts in place that will help. The biggest need that we have is when older adults run out of resources to pay for their care. We call that benevolent care. And so that is the primary focus of what myself and my staff are tending to.
So thinking big picture and long range. Okay.
Correct.
And Alan, you're with the LCMS Foundation. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do with the foundation.
Okay. Thank you. I am in what's called the gift planning services part of the LCMS Foundation. This is where we engage both with congregations and with individuals in also talking to them about some end-of-life issues and how they can leave a legacy as Christian stewards all the way to the end of their lives. You know, we're stewards while we're on this earth, managing those gifts that God has given us, but part of that stewardship involves responsibly passing on those blessings to both the family we love and the ministries that we care about. And so we assist individuals and couples as Christian stewards in that conversation.
And I'm looking forward to talking more about that in this hour, too, because it's not a topic that we really think about every day. You know, earlier this week, we talked about stewardship and understanding. We talked with Tom Kopatz from Thrivent about stewardship and really viewing all that we have and understanding that all that we have is really something that's been entrusted to us from God. It's not necessarily ours alone. And David Fiedler from LCMS Foundation, tell us a little bit about yourself and your involvement with the foundation.
Yeah, thank you, Andy. I'm president of the foundation, and in addition to working with Alan and his group with our service to Christian stewards and congregations, the foundation also helps manage investments that belong to various entities of the church, whether that's congregational endowments or various ministries that have endowments or other types of accounts that we manage on their behalf in addition to the work with the Christian stewards.
So let's start with planning and leaving a legacy. And so this question goes to Alan. We're all thinking and dreaming about retirement probably when we're working, unless you have a job like mine where you love what you do and you get to talk with great people every day. Not that I'm not thinking about retirement someday, but with a little one on the way, probably not the first thing on my mind. But we often, you know, in other places that I've worked, have conversations about retirement, but not really conversations about what we're going to leave behind and leaving a legacy, and not really thinking about, as you mentioned, Alan, serving those behind us. What are we leaving for them? What are the things that we should be thinking about?
Well, probably what would be foremost in someone's mind at this point, either as they approach retirement or are just into retirement, would be perhaps the tax consequences that might be out there on the horizon for them as they transfer their estate to their heirs or to the next generation. So in the foundation, while we are not tax accountants, tax advisors, financial planners, or anything like that, we do engage in a conversation with stewards or potential donors to just talk with them about what might be the consequences of what they have been blessed with and what might happen at their deaths in the transfer. And we give them some ideas about what they might be able to do now, what they might be able to put in place now, some type of a charitable trust or some other kind of charitable instrument that might help them manage the tax burden at the end of their life. Some things, some ideas they can talk with their financial planner about, and then we assist with the preparation of any charitable documents that might be needed to be put in place as part of their estate plan.
And so you mentioned a couple of different ways of approaching that. What are some of those that you talked about? You talked about trust and other things. Share with us a little bit more about those. What are probably the most common that you deal with?
Well, for people who want to primarily leave gifts at their deaths, there is an instrument called a charitable remainder unit trust. Some or a portion or all of their assets at the second death of a, let's say, a married couple. But the assets at the second death, some of them would go into this instrument called a charitable remainder trust to fund that trust. They can pay their family or their heirs out of that trust a certain percentage, 5 or 6% per year for 20 years that the tax law allows them to do. And then at the end of 20 years, whatever is left in that trust is then gifted to ministry. So anything that goes into a charitable trust is a charitable gift and is not taxed for either estate tax or, in the case of an IRA, for income tax purposes that would need to be paid at death. So taxes are avoided at that point legally. And you can both benefit family for 20 years and then ministry at the end of that 20 years. I think one of the greatest positives or benefits of that is it's a way, if we think that we have a family member that we love who might have difficulty managing a large amount of money that might come to them as a result of our death, they'll waste it,
uh-huh.
or they'll hurt themselves with it. This is a wonderful way of giving it to them in smaller chunks. And it's invested for them by the foundation. It's managed for them by the foundation all throughout that 20-year period. And they receive it every year for that 20 years. And so a check shows up in the mailbox every quarter, and they can say, oh, this is that money from Mom and Dad that they gave us. And so they can use it however they want. It is taxable to them at mm-hmm. that point as income, but they can use it however they want, but it's spread out over 20 years. That's a very popular and beneficial instrument that we help a lot of donors with.
And I like how you point out that that really is a way of leaving a legacy or still serving those, you know, after death, you know, still serving your family after you've died, and you can still support them. That nice reminder, they give them monthly, you know, the money monthly and saying, oh, this is what Mom and Dad left for us. I know, for me, having a similar experience, not necessarily a trust, but my grandfather, before he knew he was ill and had purchased a savings bond for my graduation a couple of years before. It was about 4 years before I graduated from high school, but he had purchased it and written a note on it and given it to my father to give to me on the day of my graduation. And
sure.
what a nice reminder of him, and it was a pretty emotional time for my family too. For my dad to go, you know, find that, you know, go down the hall and dig it out of the closet, and for everybody to sit there and remember who Grandpa was. The value wasn't necessarily so much placed on the money, but on the fact that he thought ahead and planned ahead so many years, knowing that that he would be leaving us, but leaving that gift.
I'm really pleased that you would mention that benefit of being able to pass your stewardship values on to your children. That when that income is received in that way, it's really a very visual reminder to say, this is the way Mom or Dad responsibly managed what they had been given to benefit us and ministry for years to come. So it's really a wonderful way also of passing on your faith and stewardship values to your children or your heirs.
Go ahead, David. You look like you're ready to jump in.
Yeah, sure. And in addition, what a blessing and encouragement it is to the ministry that, you know, these donors select, that, you know, we see now people who had made these very intentional decisions about how they were going to use the blessings that the Lord gave them in the 1980s, in the 1990s, now as these trusts mature, then the ministry receives a wonderful gift at the end. That's again, a blessing from the Lord and a testament to the faith and stewardship practice of these people. Another blessing of that whole practice as well.
And so how does it benefit the ministry? Obviously financially, so that can open some doors for ministries and for churches. Would it be specific? How are those funds used? Are they primarily used across synod or specific congregations? How do those work out?
Well, I think it's important that your listeners understand that the LCMS Foundation is what is called a pass-through foundation. So that the donors designate where they want those gifts to go at the end of the 20-year period. They may want it to go to their local congregation, and they may designate that it's used for facilities or that it's used for the music ministry or for community outreach, whatever it is. What the foundation does, what the service we provide, in addition to managing and investing those trust dollars to pay that income, is that we then promise to pass through those gifts to the ministries that the donors designated.
So as an investor, you certainly have something to contribute. You have a way to designate what it is. Kirk, did you have a point that you wanted to add?
Yes, Andy. I wanted to share that LSS values the LCMS Foundation as a partner, and what we're just discussing the last couple minutes was evidenced this last week check was delivered by Kirk Miller for the foundation to our organization, approaching $200,000. And it was made 20-some years ago. The gift was made, but now it comes to ministry, and it was unrestricted, so it will be going to our benevolent care fund. So just what they've talked about in theory is actually happening just this week with us.
And I certainly do want to get to the benevolent care topic. I remember hearing about that a few weeks ago as well with, I believe, with Jane on the air, and would like to talk more about that as well. More thoughts on trusts or any other investments. We talked about trusts. Anything else, Alan or David?
We sometimes people will say to us in response to this idea of a charitable trust, well, I want ministries to receive some gifts sooner than 20 years. Mm-hmm. I want ministries to receive gifts when they still know who I was, instead of 20 years down the road. And so there are instruments there as well, such as donor advised funds or personal endowment funds, or just an out-and-out bequest that can be put in your will or your living trust, specifying those ministries that you would like to benefit. All those are wonderful ways as well. I guess perhaps the main thought that I can leave in this regard is the conversation that we engage in with donors is that we help them discover whatever it is that's in their heart to do, that's in their heart to give. We don't have any specifications. We don't have any program that's designed for everyone, one size fits all. We believe that God has placed an individual gift plan in each believer's heart at their baptism. And so our job is to help them get that gift plan out of their heart and onto paper through our discussions. So it's entirely the donor's plan and the donor's intent, and our job is to facilitate them being able to carry it out.
By virtue of our baptism, being a child of God, we're all given in ways to serve and to give, and some may be small, some may be large. What do you say to the person who's working the 9-to-5 job, almost living paycheck to paycheck, and thinking there's not a lot I have to leave behind? Any advice to that person who's thinking, you know, maybe in their 30s or 40s and thinking, I'm barely going to make it to be able to retire and enjoy retirement. What are your thoughts on that, David?
Well, God blesses us all to varying degrees with the material blessings. And regardless of how much that is, we're entrusted with those as stewards to manage properly. And mortality is not something that people necessarily love to think about, but it's a consequence of our life here in the world that we will face that one day. And again, regardless of the size of our material estate, it does ultimately belong to God. And so we've got a responsibility to plan for that, because we can take care of our family, and we can also bless those ministries that are important to us, or we can do nothing and have the government, you know, assume a good chunk of it. You know, by wise planning and good stewardship, we can steer those resources to ministry regardless of the amount. It's not somebody that needs to be a millionaire that it's important to think about these things. We all have material resources with which we're entrusted in. It's our responsibility as Christians to deal responsibly with them.
I think, Andy, that you bring up a very common response that we sometimes get. It's as Dave said, it's not at all the size of the gift or the thought that somebody might have now, well, I don't have a lot right now, or I'm making ends meet barely with what I have. But it's helping them to understand and internalize the idea that part of my Christian stewardship is to give back what God has given me. So if it's something as simple as just putting in your will, I bequeath 10% of my estate to list whatever ministry you want to list. Mm-hmm. That's tithing what God has blessed you with back to Him and back to ministry. It doesn't matter if your estate is $1,000 or $10 million. It's the idea that I'm being a Christian steward. I'm being a faithful child of God all the way to heaven.
Mm-hmm. And we talked earlier this week with Tom about that everything that we have is a trust from God.
Absolutely.
Just as we sing in the hymn, that all that He's given us is really not our own. It is a gift from Him. Everything around us, everything in this world is His, and it's entrusted to us.
And we're finding, as we speak with donors, I'm constantly amazed and gratified both. Christians understand that. They know that as stewards and as God's children. But we find so often that they've had nobody educate them about this. They've had nobody assist them, and they've had nobody encourage them. And so it becomes a conversation that they're very receptive to when we sit down with them and are able to work through this with them. They just need somebody to do those things, to educate and encourage them.
And that's what we talked about with Tom on Monday, was approaching this topic with children. So what would you recommend, any advice to when we start talking about these topics with kids, you know, when a teenager starts maybe working or younger, when they're working, you know, mowing lawns or working their first part-time job, any advice for parents or for that teen?
Well, I think our role with that generation, with a teenager, let's say, would probably not be very much. Mm-hmm. That's more, I think, where you start talking about the weekly stewardship of their earnings, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. I would say probably young couples, when they first start their family, become receptive to our questions and receptive to having the discussion. And when we work with young families, really we try to encourage them along two lines. The first is, make sure you have a plan in place for the guardianship of your children. Mm-hmm. It's something a lot of times young families think about, but they don't do. Maybe they don't know how to do it. Maybe they don't think they have the time. Maybe they think that it'll be expensive. It's none of those things. But then the second thing we encourage them to do is just what I said before. You don't know how much you're going to have. You don't know how the Lord is going to bless you in the next, hopefully, 50 or 60 years of your life. But perhaps put a percentage in that will that we help you prepare, and the discussion that we have that you can take to the attorney. Or take your life insurance policy that you're taking out because now you have a child and designate a percentage in there for ministry. Those are very simple steps. They cost nothing now, but that's, again, part of your being a responsible steward.
All good points. So for young couples, certainly life insurance and possibly even start thinking about a trust, is that you think, what would you recommend? Obviously life insurance. What other things would you recommend with about 1 minute before we go to break?
Sure. I think that, as I mentioned, those two primary areas of guardianship and then some gift, probably a percentage gift, certainly we take our lead from those that we're talking with. And if they want to have that discussion, if there are some things in their financial area of life that need attention and they have questions about that, we're certainly willing to engage them with any of those instruments that we think might assist them. But that's generally not the case.
Well, we're talking with some great friends from the LCMS Foundation and Lutheran Senior Services today about planning for the later years in life. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us in the studio at 314-821-0850 or 1-800-730-2727 or email us here at family@kfuo.org. We'll be right back with more about planning for the later years financially here on Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of Inspiration in Action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
When discussing gay priests, what did Pope Francis mean when he said, "If someone is gay and he searches for the Lord and has good will, who am I to judge?" And does the new Pope teach liberation theology? We'll find out Wednesday on Issues Etc. from Dr. James Hitchcock of St. Louis University.
Issues Etc. live weekday afternoons from 3 to 5 on KFUO.
Hi, this is Rich Robertson, the president of the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. Did you know it only takes a few words or a kind gesture to lift up someone in need of hearing the gospel? You can help LCMS Ministries concentrate on doing more and reaching more. With the Lutheran Church Extension Fund investment, you empower ministries with loans and resources that keep the mission moving forward. Investments directly benefit LCMS schools, congregations, care centers, universities, and international ministries. Visit lcef.org or call 800-843-5233.
When your church, school, or organization is planning a special event, let KFUO help you get out the word. We can promote your event in the KFUO Datebook. Give us a call. Tell us about the event, where it will be held, the date, and the time. When your event's in our Datebook, it's announced several times a day. Call us and get your event broadcast on the radio. It's a public service of worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
It's one of the most popular 21st century hymns being sung in churches today.
In Christ alone, my hope is found.
But In Christ Alone won't appear in the new hymnal of the Presbyterian Church USA because hymn writers Keith Getty and Stuart Townend refused to change the lyrics. Mary Louise Bringle, who chairs the Presbyterian Committee on Congregational Songs, writes in the Christian Century that some committee members objected to the line. Bringle says they asked if the lyric could be changed to say, "The love of God was magnified." The hymn writers said no. Getty has said they wrote In Christ Alone to tell the whole gospel. Bringle writes that the committee didn't want the hymnal to suggest that Jesus' death on the cross was an atoning sacrifice needed to assuage God's anger over sin. I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates, and we are having a great conversation here in the studio today, talking about a variety of things that pertain to planning for the final years of life and planning financially as good stewards of all that God has entrusted to us. So we've been spending some time talking about leaving a legacy. How do we do that and how do we prepare for that? But what about those last few years or last, maybe it could be last 10, 15 years, could be the last year or two. How do we plan for those if we or a loved one needs some specialized care or some specific care? How do we plan for those? So our friends from Lutheran Senior Services are here to answer questions about that today as well. And likewise, if you have some questions, you want to join the conversation, you can do that as well. Give us a call here in the studio if you're in the St. Louis area, area code 314-821-0850, or outside of the St. Louis area, 1-800-730-2727. So, Jennifer, you're the specialist here. We get to come to you and ask these questions. What are the types of, we've all heard of nursing homes, we've heard of assisted living. What are the different types of care and what purposes do they serve in those later years of life?
Well, there's definitely a difference between a licensed level of care and a level of care that you're seeking for amenities for your loved one. So if you're looking for something that's more social driven, like an independent living setting, or if you need something more specialized because there is some things going on with your loved one mentally, cognitively, mm-hmm. physically, what have you,
sure.
You have those licensed level of care. And that's most common, you'll hear assisted living, residential care is similar to that, skilled nursing, and then, of course, how do you figure out where do you belong? So that's when you pull in your resource team. Maybe you have a doctor. Maybe there's a nurse in your family. Or maybe you need to go to an outside source like Lutheran Senior Services. So that's pretty much what that team's there for, is to help identify what's going on with your loved one, how to really address those needs for them and make sure that their last years are comfortable and they're living their life to the fullest extent.
So let's take a look at a few scenarios, and then after we talk about those scenarios, then we'll talk about how do we prepare for those financially. A common example, Alzheimer's. A loved one is in early stages of Alzheimer's and having trouble with some day-to-day functions, but can be somewhat independent. What kind of resources do you think would be available, or would you recommend?
Well, Lutheran Senior Services has a really great opportunity for living. It's called an assisted living for memory care. And those folks are pretty physically able-bodied, and they can do a lot for themselves, but cognitively they need that cueing and reminding to get through their day. So definitely there's opportunity for a move-in or placement, if you will. But then at the same time, you can always think about in-home services to help alleviate maybe a huge move, a huge transition, but then to really meet those needs of that loved one so that they are making that decision together. Do we move or do we stay?
Sure.
And there's opportunity to get that addressed.
And what would help, what would be kind of, I'm sure it's different from individual to individual. What would be the determining factor, stay at home or move? Are there a number of things, and does money play a role in that in terms of preparedness? I'm sure Jennifer has something to say about, and Kirk looks like he's got something to say about that. Okay, so Jennifer, and then we'll go to Kirk too.
Yes, it is financial. Kirk.
There's also issues with safety and that type of thing. And I think when an individual is single, they need that extra care sooner. A spouse with them can help enable them to stay at home longer. But yes, the residential care does cost, so you need to plan for that, and that's sooner the better you plan for that.
So how do we plan for it?
Well, you know, the generation we're serving now have been the saving generation, and they've been well prepared. The boomer generation that's coming up is not as well prepared asset-wise. They've not endorsed the spendthrift lifestyle of our seniors. And I just ran across a statistic that once one person turns 65 every 7 seconds in the nation, and Missouri is older than the average, so it's even faster than that. So the boomers are coming, and the main thing, two things I have to recommend for planning for care is start sooner than later. That's true with any of our financial goals, providing an inheritance for our loved ones, that type of thing. That's true as well. But also long-term care insurance, and that is really evolved. There's different combinations or hybrid forms of it. But in a nutshell, you can take a small portion of your asset base and put it into paying premiums for protection, and that can protect the rest of your estate and guarantee that you have the funds to live the lifestyle where you want to live it and not be forced to make harder choices.
When is a good time to start that? When is it too late to start insurance like that?
That's a good question to ask for an insurance man. The rates absolutely increase the older you are. Back in the day when I bought it for my wife and I, 50 was the youngest they'd sell it. I think they sell it significantly younger than that now, and they sell it into their 80s now too. So it's one of those things, the earlier you start, the more manageable the premium. Mm-hmm. But the later you start, you still have to pass the insuring, so that's another reason two started earlier, while you passed the different requirements, underwriting requirements. So it's do you want to take the gamble or do you want to protect? That's true with any insurance, your car insurance, your homeowner insurance, whatever. You have a significantly more chance of needing long-term care insurance than you would car insurance. The study that I have in front of me that is saying that any long-term care need, 69% of us will need some form of long-term care. That may be a matter of weeks or maybe a matter of many years.
So if I obviously that can be a good investment, a wise investment. What if I didn't, I wasn't wise and I didn't start thinking about that early enough. And maybe I didn't go the insurance route. Other options, other ideas.
That's really what your, both your retirement income and your retirement assets that you've set aside, those need to be available for your care. And many times, mom and dad set about, stashing away an asset for their children, but when the time comes that they need it for their care, the children say, hey, that's what you have it there for. They may feel bad about not having an inheritance to pass on, but they know that their children love them to have that care at the quality that, that they could afford to pay.
The insurance, go ahead.
Well, one other that parlays into that is don't forget to go on a wait list with a community or a facility that you would like to go to later in life, because sometimes just something that simple kind of helps pave the way for what your kids are because you just never know. So just don't be frightened to go on a wait list at any age either.
And make it easier on your loved ones, especially on your children, to make it easier. They don't have to make those decisions then. If you've already made those decisions,
correct,
it makes it easier on them and makes that process less stressful, especially if there's a move involved. Mom, you made this choice and we support this choice, and so we're going to help you through this move rather than we're making this choice for you. I'm sure that can make that process a little bit easier.
Jennifer and I have seen many, many opportunities to see that the children are so pleased when they know their parents have the proper care. So they'll do anything they can do to help them and make that transition. And if the children are out of town, that's even more reason to know that they are confident of their care and not in danger.
Sure. And having that insurance knowing that that the care is not going to be interrupted because the insurance was there. I know that you're not in the insurance business, but from a layperson's perspective, with other types of insurance, there are other we pay our premiums, but then sometimes there are deductibles and things like that along the way. As an average layperson, what would we expect if we were, and I'm sure there are different types of insurance, but just typically, what would we see? Would there be other costs other than the premiums that we would need to anticipate for care?
Really not. And a good way to use a yardstick on how much coverage to have is to estimate at the community that you want to be cared for, understand their pricing, and then look at your annual income and see what fraction of that is covered. And because most people like to endeavor to preserve their assets. So if the a care center costs $200 a day and your income would cover $100 a day, you might be looking at $100 a day additional insurance.
Now, are care facilities following a similar process that universities are following? If you start at this rate, you're going to lock in at this rate. Or if you plan on going to this university and start making payments now, you're going to be locked in at that rate.
We're not there, Andy. the cost of health care is dramatically changing, and it does affect us like it does anybody in the long-term care industry. The department I head up is called Stewardship, and it's named that primarily to help the residents to be good stewards of their assets. But we also try to be the best stewards of the the revenue that the residents pay to us to take care of them. So our annual increases can be as modest as possible, the stewardship angle there.
My you've heard my story. My wife and I are expecting now. My parents, both of our sets of parents, are in their 60s. What are the things that you've brought up? Some of the good things that we need to be thinking about. Anything else that we need to be thinking about? Kirk,
Jennifer mentioned that you need to get on the wait list if the community has wait lists, so you have your primary choices in order, and you're communicating, and people. You can get updates on the transitions that are happening. I think it's a mindset, too, that people have to adjust to. The 65 is a new 55 or whatever, you know, that type of thinking. The retirement communities, the quality communities, are not the nursing home, that the term that you use that's antiquated in our industry or our level of care. It's more of a care center. It's more of a lifestyle. In fact, the levels of care that Jennifer mentioned, we use the abbreviation or the acronym CCRC, standing for Continuing Care Retirement Community. And people come in, like any of us in this room, active, can play golf, do all the activities, whatever they choose to do. But then they're in place to transition through the different levels of care without making a drastic move. Location, same people there around. So I can say the years I've been with Lutheran Senior Services, as I meet with people, the most common response is, why didn't I do this sooner? Mm-hmm. It's not the fearful thing of the years past of there you go for the last resort. This is actually, use a double entendre there, it's actually a resort setting to a certain extent. You really enjoy the different activities and amenities in the retirement community.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
So, Andy, I would say I would encourage those kiddos to have that conversation with their loved one. Have that hard conversation. Find out what their intentions are. Do you want to stay in your home? Why or why not? What do we need to do to bring things into the home to make it easier for you? If dad goes first, what happens? If mom goes first, what happens? If we are out-of-town kids, do you want to stay here? Do you want to come where we are? So really have those tough conversations of, hey, if something happens to you, where do you want us to take you? Where do you want to be? And there's so many resources out there, and there's so many things out there to really make sure that that older adult is taken care of, either in a home setting or in a community setting. Mm-hmm. And Kirk's right, you know, with the CCRC, you move in independent living, you move into an assisted living, and as things start to change for you, you age within campus. Well, the same can happen within your own home. I mean, if you bring in services into your own home and things start to change for you, you increase those in-home services. So it's a combination of having that tough conversation, and unfortunately, yeah, that does include some money. What exactly can anybody afford? But if and when money's run out, you find those communities that have great things like benevolent care to help, and so you know your mom's not ever going to be in the street someday. And
mm-hmm. Sure, sure. And I want to come back to benevolent care. I want to go to Ellen has a comment here.
Well, as Kirk and Jen were talking there, one of the things that we encourage donors that we talk with, she was talking about those conversations children can have with their older parents. I would include in that, mom or dad, who do you want to make financial decisions for you mm-hmm. when you are no longer able to do that? Who do you want to make health care decisions for you when you are no longer able to do that? Talk with them about that. Get them to think through that and name names, and then put the proper documents in place to make sure that you have those powers of attorney, and that's all taken care of when, in the snap of a finger, something can happen.
Sure. I think the challenging thing is when your family doesn't typically have those conversations like that serious nature, how do you start that topic? Is there a greeting card series that helps you start that topic? How do you bring that up? How do you ease into that conversation? You know, are there resources to help you open up those conversations, Jennifer?
Yes, definitely there are. There's plenty of folks out there, all those professionals. I think Alan's one of them. And then, of course, you can get into more of the health and the social piece of bringing in a doctor or having a case manager and having somebody kind of start, be that third party, that neutral party, mm-hmm. and say, hey, we do need to talk about this. And mom, dad, we may not have that relationship, but let's get this person in here to kind of field the way and go from there. So yeah, there's plenty of resources out there. Doctors are great. Geriatric care managers are great. Social workers, anybody in the financial field.
We're not thinking about it when everybody's healthy. We're not necessarily, it's not something we want to talk about. And then it sounds like a real a downer, kind of morbid. We don't want to talk about that right now. Everybody's healthy and we're doing fine. So trying to tap into some of those resources, like you mentioned, in order to open those conversations. Maybe the family doctor is a good place to start. Maybe, like you said, other resources as well.
You really see it happening from either direction. The parent could be bringing it up with the child or vice versa. Andy, I did want to mention, too, another gift vehicle that Alan and the folk at the LCMS Foundation use, but is very critical in our stewardship effort. It ties in with the seniors as their Social Security doesn't rise much. Their pensions may not. Mm-hmm. Their health care costs have increased. We've got a gift vehicle that's very conducive that can meet multiple needs there by increasing their income. And at the end of life, it makes a gift. And that's called charitable gift annuity. And we do a lot of those with people that care about Lutheran Senior Services and perpetuating the ministry we have there. They can do that with a very tax-advantaged income stream that increases their ability.
And I would like to also go back and talk about the benevolent care. Is that right?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that. I know we talked about it on his time one day in the last 2 weeks, but can you share with us a little bit more about that?
Certainly. I'd like to start off with the biggest misunderstanding for the need of benevolent care, because people see that people that have spent all their assets, then Medicare kicks in. And doesn't that mean the government takes care of the person? And in Missouri and Illinois, the two states that we have communities, they're the 49th and 50th lowest reimbursement, daily reimbursement for Medicaid. So it doesn't pay for quality care. It pays about $100 a day. That extra $100 maybe no longer can come from those individuals. And so that's why we've established this endowment fund. It kind of fills what we call the Medicaid gap. And that adds up to large money if they're losing $100 a day. But as Jen says, with being with a quality organization that offers benevolent care, your care is not decreased as you've outlived your ability to pay. And that's where the philanthropy of many kick in and help people have the same services as before.
And do you see... When someone is using that, are they aware that how aware are the guests who benefit from that, or the clients who benefit from it?
The person is aware of it. The family is aware of it. But that's it. Mm-hmm. I'm not aware of anybody on benevolent care. We respect respect and dignity of the individuals. We have no idea what has transpired. It may have been a long stay in the care center. It may have been we have situations where pension funds disappear after a person's retired with the economy we've had. So we haven't walked in their shoes, but we want to be able to provide for them and give them the ability to continue with the quality care.
Jennifer?
Yes, definitely. What Kirk's saying is when you have that person, then their monies have been exalted. There's really no difference between the level of care and the room type and what they're getting, both emotionally and all of their needs are being met, there's no difference between somebody that's still paying privately or somebody that's now in a, you know, Medicaid certified benevolent assistance type of setting. And so that's really what makes Lutheran so great, is that, you know at the end of the day, we're still taking care of your mom. We're still taking care of your dad, your aunt, your uncle, whoever that is. And there's no difference.
It's the same care that they were getting the day they came in the door. They're still getting that assistance, that support, that loving care, and that compassion.
And the benevolent care we focused on here is at the care center level or skilled nursing care, but it comes into a smaller dollar amount to other levels of care. There may be situations, and even in home services, there may be a benevolent care component to some of those as well.
Other thoughts? We've got just about 3 minutes to pack it all in. I know the hour has gone so quickly, all the great stuff that we've been talking
really
about. Other thoughts that other things we need to be considering when we're thinking about these later years in life, that how to prepare for them, how to plan for them. Anybody just have a burning thought that they have to share that we haven't covered yet today?
Not burning thought, but I do want to say that the statistics show that the women have the longest time in a care center. Mm-hmm. So it's even more important that a husband provide for a wife's finances if the income would go down at the first person's death, which is normally the male. So the time in care center is significantly more for the female gender. So you need to take that in consideration when you plan.
Absolutely. Any more thoughts from Foundation as to what our next steps should be? If somebody wants to know where to go for their next steps in terms of planning for the future,
certainly they can always call us here at the International Center, the LCMS Foundation. They can get online, LCMSFoundation.org or LFND.org, and we work both with individuals if they call and have a certain situation, but we also work a lot with congregations. And so we have what's called a Transfer the Blessings ministry that we deliver to congregations, and then perhaps there's a congregational effort to offer this to their members of all ages, so they can speak to their pastor or they can speak to the leadership of their congregation to say, would you check this out? I think this might be something that would be of help to our fellow members and ultimately to God's kingdom.
So they can go on the web or call to get those resources. That the website was
is LCMSFoundation.org.
LCMSFoundation.org. And with about a minute left, tell us a little bit about how to get in touch with LSS if we want to start making those next steps, trying to figure out who should we contact? What do we need to do?
Well, you can always check out the website, lssliving.org. We have a resource and referral line that is housed by our outreach social workers that can assist with kind of addressing where to go in-house. And that number is 314-446-2475. And then I am at LaCleed Groves, located in Webster, so I can assist with anything that needs to be done at that location, but lssliving.org is probably the best place to start.
Well, I really appreciate all of you spending some time with us today talking about these important matters when it comes to financial planning for the later years. So Jennifer and Kirk, thank you for joining us from LSS, Lutheran Senior Services.
Thank you.
And Ellen and David, thank you for joining us today from LCMS Foundation. I really feel like I got a lot of my questions answered today, so thank you for joining us as well today. And tomorrow on Faith and Family, we'll be talking about planning for now we've talked about the later years. Let's jump forward a little bit. How to plan for college, whether you've got a little one or a high school student, or maybe you're thinking about going back to college as an adult. How do you plan for that? So coming up on Faith and Family tomorrow, we'll talk about planning for college. Thanks for joining us. Stick around for Moments of Assurance on Worldwide KFUO.